episode 138 of Speak Beastly for November 14th, 2021. I'm Anne.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Shannon.
Welcome! It's past the spooky season. Don't worry, there's not going to be any more talk about ghosts or anything like that for now.
No, well, maybe not in your house. You've never met my mother-in-law.
Oh, true.
I do love my mother-in-law, but there is a room in her house, at least one room in her house now, that looks the way Spirit Halloween looks, but it's like that all year.
Good.
This is an aesthetic, and I love it.
It's cool looking. I like it.
Didn't we come up with a snow beastie? Something when she was snow beastie's not very good, but
I think I came up with Mary Beastie, which is terrible. Or maybe Speak Mary, I don't know. If people have better ideas for
Speak
seasonal.
Mary, I think is a little better.
Beast Turkey.
Speak Turkey.
Speak Turkey.
I said Beast Turkey, but Turk Beastie. Wait. Now I'm getting lost. Turk Beastie, Speak Turkey.
Turk Beastie,
I don't know.
I like Speak Turkey, though. That's good.
Okay, great. Speak Turkey. Not everybody around the world celebrates Halloween. I just said Halloween. Gosh. Not everybody around the world celebrates Thanksgiving, but you know what? That doesn't mean they can't enjoy turkey.
Some people eat turkey for Christmas and for not Christmas, if you don't celebrate Christmas. Some people don't eat turkey.
Yeah, people just enjoy turkey.
Some of us eat turkey that's made out of tofu, and they call it tofurkey, which is fun to say.
Speak tofurkey.
Speak tofu. Gosh, we are coming up with a lot of ideas right now.
Yeah.
Right, anyway. So,
welcome to whatever this show is now.
Yeah. So,
all right, so we'd like to send a shout out to our Speak Turkey, Beastie, whatever, Patreon supporter of the week, JY. Thank you so much for your support.
Woohoo!
Woo!
All right. Shall we get straight to it?
I guess, yeah.
There was some stuff happening
this week, so we should probably do a Phoenix Register, right?
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
I can't believe we're still getting all this news. I feel spoiled.
I'm not surprised at all because we had a drought of no news for the longest time, and now we're finally getting some. This first thing isn't technically, I don't know if you would actually call this news or not. It's more like an interesting thing. So we as a fandom are in the midst of celebrating the 20th anniversary of the first Harry Potter film, Sorcerer's Stone. And as part of that, the director, Chris Columbus, gave an interview with Variety magazine where he said something that's getting a lot of buzz. He says he would be interested in making a Cursed Child movie with the original cast because they'd be about the right age to do it.
I would like to say that the idea of a Cursed Child movie is a cursed concept. And we shouldn't. And I haven't seen the show, but I know that it's like an incredible feat of theater. And I think it should stay in the theater. It wouldn't be as incredible on the screen. And that's not even, like, talking about the story.
First of all, thank you for pronouncing the second T in theater.
Theater.
You can always spot people who have been in the theater and people who haven't, whether they pronounce that T or not. That's the code.
That and you don't say the name of the Scottish play.
That's
true.
I think you're right, though. It wouldn't translate as well as a movie. On the other hand, the little devil on my shoulder right now is whispering that if they made a Cursed Child movie, it would do so poorly that all the heat the Fantastic Beasts franchise has been taking would magically disappear. So maybe we should, secretly hope for it?
I don't know. I think I'd be down for a Cursed Child pro shoot. Before
yeah, that would be good.
A proper movie, just because I think you're right, Shannon. I don't really know how well it would translate to being a proper movie, but
because it would just be the reason that it's been so the stuff about it that's been so acclaimed is the effects and stuff, mm-hmm. and in a movie it would just be normal movie stuff.
Yeah, they should do what they did with Hamilton. There was buzz for years that there was going to be a Hamilton movie. People were worried about whether it would translate or not. And in the end, they just filmed the actual stage production with the original cast, and they put that out. And you know what? That's everything I ever wanted from seeing a production of Hamilton. I could probably go see, I don't know, I may be wrong, but I could probably go see it live with a different cast and not get the same feeling as seeing the original cast actually doing it. So I think they should film a stage version with, if not the original cast, then at least with whatever cast happens to be running it at the time on Broadway and put that out.
If, Daniel Radcliffe wants to, reprise his role as Harry in Cursed Child at some point, that'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
It would be the sort of thing that he might actually do. He's a veteran of the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. Yeah. Daniel Radcliffe is a good actor. I'll die on that hill if I have to.
Oh, he's a great actor. He's fantastic in Swiss Army Man.
He's great in, I'm not going to say he's great in everything. I'll say his performance in almost everything is great. He's made some crappy movies.
Well, sure.
Who has?
But, every great actor makes at least a few bad ones, right?
Yeah.
You can't help that.
As somebody who went through most of Chris Pine's filmography back in the early 2010s, yes.
Why would
a lot of
this?
Actors have made a lot of very bad movies.
he's doing great, though.
Chris he's living his best life, but boy howdy, some of those movies. I did watch Just My Luck, which has Ariel's favorite band, McFly, in it, and boy, that's a movie. That's a movie.
mm-hmm. That it is.
Also, Jeff, it looks like you've got an extra special bit of news coming up here.
I did, and this whole thing happened, honestly, I was telling a friend of mine about this, and it happened so quickly that I actually almost forgot that it happened and almost failed to mention it to them, but we were contacted by a very, very nice guy named Brian Sheehan. He hosts a podcast called TV Trivia Pod. He's kicking off a series of Harry Potter trivia. He's been doing The Office for roughly a year, I think he said. And
holy
he
cow.
Wanted. Yeah, I know. Trust me. That factored into it because I'm a huge Office fan. So he and I definitely talked about that. But he asked for volunteers to do some Harry Potter trivia, and I put my hand up because I'm unable to control that particular impulse.
Sure.
So we went in, we did an episode together. It went great. The show is called TV Trivia Pod, and I think he said that episode is going to be out December 14th. So if anybody wants to hear yours truly smashing some Sorcerer's Stone trivia, then check that out halfway through December.
Did you win?
Did I win what?
The trivia, did you win?
I wasn't competing against anybody else.
So you won. Good job, son.
Nice.
Depends. Let me ask you this. Out of a possible 20 questions, how many points would you say is good?
20.
I mean, a B would be 16 questions?
Mm-hmm. How many do you think
B?
I got?
I would hope you... Did you get 20?
I did not get 20.
Did you get 16?
You just have to listen to 16. The episode to find out.
You're right. I don't want to spoil if Jeff got a B or a C plus.
All right, you know what? Just because we're friends, I'm going to tell you guys. I got, out of a possible 20 points, I got 30.
What?
Yes, that is real math. That is, you know what? That math is so ridiculous. That is house point math.
Wow.
That is how insane that is. A couple of questions were, he ended up giving multiple points. At one point, I think he asked me, when Ron looks in the mirror of Erised, what does he see? And since I was able to list literally everything he said he saw, he gave me a point per thing.
Wow.
So yeah, 30 points out of 20. And then we did a the best part for B was we did a bonus for his Patreon, which people can check out if they check out the Patreon for TV Trivia Pod. And we ran out of Harry Potter questions for him to ask me. So when he found out I was a fan of The Office, he started asking me Office questions, and he only got me once.
Wow. Nice. That is some Hermione Granger time turner points there for you.
Unfortunately, he didn't ask me my house, so my house can't get the points. The points are all for B. Those are my points.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for that coming out December 14th. We'll be sure to post links all over our social media so everyone will be able to see Jeff just destroy some Harry Potter trivia.
Yeah. So we have no owl post today. No owls. Sad face.
It's okay. The owls are getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah, they're on break.
Union break.
If you want to send us some owl posts, though, you should... you can go on any of our social media, or you can email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com, and you should do that. We love owl posts. Just say hi, like, someone will read it, you know?
Yep, I promise at least I will read it, and yeah. I will put it on the show, and we will feel so touched and loved that you took time out of your busy day to email us.
Yeah.
It's like being with a friend.
Wow. Speaking of friends, thank you for the segue.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's almost like I was providing a segue.
Love it. You love a good segue. This week's main discussion is about the hashtag new squad.
Squad goals. Am I right?
Well, maybe. With most of them, maybe. At least two of them. At least 2.5 of them, I would say, are goals. The other, I don't know.
Well, once we're done, we can figure out who we want in our personal friend groups.
I like that.
So we are discussing the new characters that showed up in Crimes of Grindelwald. We're going to kind of go over who they are, their motivations, what we think they bring, what we think they'll do in future movies. And for reference, because there were a lot of new characters introduced in Crimes of Grindelwald, we're saying the new squad are the folks who showed up at Hogwarts with Newt and the gang at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald. So Bundy's not new squad. Vinda's not new squad. As much as I love them, but they are not hashtag new squad.
Mm-mm. No, you have to do the mission to be the squad. You have to do the missions.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. You can't just do the side quests. You have to do the main mission.
That's right.
Okay. So first things, who is the new squad? Who are they? Anyway, first one is Yusuf.
Love him.
I love him so much.
He is a sewer dweller, a revenge seeker, and a wearer of snazzy hats.
Wearer of snazzy everything. That man knows how to dress.
That man does know how to dress.
And he gets stuff done.
Yeah, so that's true.
Ready for the Yusuf spinoff movie, honestly.
I'm cool
Please.
With it.
Please. Yeah.
What was when I first saw Yusuf's name in the doc, what I started thinking about, and then this translated into each of the characters in the new squad, was exactly what is their motivation? What brings them into the story? What drives their character for Crimes of Grindelwald? And is that motivation something that is likely to stick around? Because what motivates Yusuf Kama is vengeance. We see this guy, and then when we get his backstory, we find out that his dad put a burden on him in the form of an unbreakable vow, and that he has been hunting down a person, a specific person, ever since. Even after that person changes, he's still hunting down somebody to fulfill this vengeful, unbreakable vow.
Yeah.
You know, typical thing you'd put on a kid, right?
We've talked a lot before about, like, where does the unbreakable vow stand now? And we don't know. And because it's like, can he still keep seeking vengeance? Is he just like, I guess I do nothing now? My life is meaningless? Like, I think he's in a transitionary period. He's between jobs.
Between hit jobs.
So...
Somebody has to have done some research on unbreakable vows that would be able to help him, but he has no way of knowing that. Like, somebody in the Department of Mysteries has to have done, like, controlled experiments with unbreakable vows to see if there are loopholes that can get you out of them. Like, did he fulfill it or not?
Sure.
But that would be very dangerous research to fund, I would think.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you break an unbreakable vow, you die, right?
Right.
Right, and we've talked before about...
If he couldn't fulfill it and it wasn't his fault, I mean, like you said, we talked about this before, if he didn't fulfill it but it wasn't his fault, that's not the same as breaking it, because his motivation... I think the fact that he at least tried to the best of his ability to fulfill the vow, that's the thing.
Well, we've talked
before about... He stuck to his end of it.
Like, the way this vow is set up, it's hard to break it. You would just stop trying. So, like...
Yeah.
If he was still bound by it, would he just die if he was like, nah, I give up? Or...
I think it's about what's really in his heart. Like,
yeah.
if in his heart and in his mind, he truly had let go of the idea of pursuing this person, and he knew for definite sure that he was not going to fulfill the vow, then his heart would stop.
Sure.
Interesting.
But that was his motivation up to this point, and we've just established several times. He doesn't have this vow anymore. He couldn't fulfill it anyway. So... what's going to motivate him now?
Yeah, that's the question.
Like, finding a... like, I think it's the pursuit of purpose is going to be what drives the character. And that's honestly what makes him such a great choice going forward, is that he now has basically a blank slate. He doesn't have this burden anymore that he has to carry with him, so he can find something else to live for. And at the end of the movie, he's surrounded by people who have all these... purposes.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore is good at making people feel important and getting them to do stuff. And now here is a ready and able soldier who can do the things for you.
Maybe Dumbledore will just give him assignments. Yeah.
I think I put that somewhere later in the doc. Like, that could be like his thing going forward, is Dumbledore uses him as like a spy for espionage stuff.
That would be great.
Like, use of comma in different outfits and disguises, like maybe even give him a little polyjuice potion. Like, you see somebody doing some kind of intel gathering mission in Brazil, and you're like, who's this person? They have no backstory. They're not established. And then, like, you see them just kind of shuddering, and the polyjuice potion wears off, and surprise, it's use of comma.
I would love that. That would be so good.
I like it. I think it would be really good. Who's next?
Next up is my husband, Theseus.
Better not let your actual husband hear that, or does he know? Is this one of those things where you have an agreement?
No, Theseus is on the list. It's
okay.
Fine.
Okay.
There's three people on the list. It's, who's the third one? It's Chris Evans, Theseus Scamander.
I am so glad you said Chris Evans, and I'm sure you can probably see why.
No, it's, we'll get to this, but anyway, there's someone else. I forget who else is on the list. But he is a ministry worker. He is a rule follower. And he is, as is evidenced by me, Mr. Steal Yo Girl.
He could probably be Mr. Steal Yo just person in general, let's be honest.
Pretty much.
Like, people are feeling him. You said Chris Evans. I couldn't help myself. Every time I thought, when I was preparing for this episode, every time I thought about Theseus, I could not think about, this guy is basically the Harry Potter equivalent of Captain America.
And that is why I realized, like, you made that point, and I was like, oh, this is why I love him, because he's like Percy and Captain America.
He's like...
my two favorite characters.
Handsome.
He's like not quite rebellious as Captain America.
Well, that's why instead of working for the Avengers, he works for the government. Like, that's the tipping point. That's the difference. But otherwise, he's a clean-cut, straightforward, good guy with a strong moral compass, no-nonsense leadership skills, great haircut.
He's a guy who works for the government because he actually wants to do good.
And he strikes me as the type of person who, like, he doesn't always like convincing people that unjust laws are necessary, but he does believe in the absolute necessity of the law.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, like, Dumbledore can see in Theseus that he's a good person, because when everybody came to be like, Dumbledore, you suck. Dumbledore was like, hey, but Theseus, let me talk to you.
Because you're the one who can see reason, like, and people listen to you.
Yeah. And Theseus was like, I don't know.
Like, I don't know, Tony.
He's a good gentleman.
He is.
I am really excited to see, like, where he could go from here.
Yeah, because, like, sticking with the Captain America thing, the Captain America we meet in First Avenger versus the Captain America we see at the end of Infinity War Endgame, two very different guys.
Much older. Because yes. One of them is a kid and one of them is an old man, and they're both Chris Evans, and it's weird.
So, seeing if Theseus has a similar arc where he does kind of go from the law is right, the government is right, towards more, I'm going to do what I need to protect the people I love. And if the law has a problem with that, then I guess the law has a problem with me. Yeah. Might be an interesting arc.
Mm-hmm. There's no way we're losing him, though, going forward. Like, he's here to stay.
Oh,
all the trouble they went to, like, to set up his backstory, and the strength of connection that he has to the other principal cast members, there's no way they mm-hmm. can't include him.
Yeah.
He's going to be their guy. He's going to be the guy who is like the ant. Grindelwald is out there making his arguments for his cause. He's going to be the one out there trying to do, like, preventative measures so that people aren't buying into it before it's too late.
Yep.
And he, like, the second movie kind of revolved so much around Newt and Theseus's relationship that it would be weird for Theseus to just disappear after this.
To be like, okay, well, nice travels, bye.
Yeah.
All right, so next we have Nagini, mm-hmm. who is a circus performer, part-time snake, and rooftop lover.
Gotta love those rooftop scenes. Now, did that you think will be important in Secrets of Dumbledore, the important use of rooftops?
I mean, we have established previously that it's a thing throughout most of Harry Potter canon that roofs are important. So hopefully they will continue this important tradition.
I mean, if no one stands on a roof in the next movie, like, what are we doing?
Right? Are we even watching a Wizarding World movie?
You gotta have a Dumbledore up on a roof, like.
Growing up, I was always told it was important to have a roof over your head, but this universe teaches us the importance of having a roof under your feet.
That's right.
That's life. That's everything you need to know about it. But what we need to know about Nagini, when I was thinking about her, like, what are the things that motivates Nagini's character? She seems to care most about being safe because she kind of never has been. Sure. She wants to be independent because since she's on the margins of society, she's never really been able to take care of herself because nobody will give her a chance to do it. And yet, at the same time, she wants to belong to a squad. Like, she wants to be part of a group.
Hashtag squad goals.
That's true. She literally looked at them and said, yep, I'm sticking with them.
Yeah, and she has, emotionally, I think she has the most to gain from being part of a squad like this. Like, Theseus is well liked by everybody, so if he loses one squad, he's just going to pick up another. Yusuf, he I think likes being around other people, but he seems content to be alone. And then we'll get to Lita in a minute, but Nagini to me seems like the one who needs more than any of the others to really belong.
Yes.
Which is why it's so heartbreaking at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald when they build up this whole connection between her and Credence. And then Credence is off at the castle with Grindelwald. And you just know that if they ever do see each other again, it's not going to be like it was.
She's going to be pissed.
Oh, yeah. She's going to be super mad.
I mean, I think a lot of, like, what happens with Nagini going forward is gonna depend on if she wants to help Credence or not. Like, is she gonna be like, yes, I want to help save Credence, I want to help y'all, I don't want Credence to die? Is she gonna be like, no, he abandoned me, he sucks now?
Yeah, I think that's also gonna depend a lot on what Credence does.
Yeah, and honestly,
how much,
like,
of it she sees.
What everyone else decides to do about Credence. We don't really know that either.
I don't know how you would set this up, but one way I can see that going down, what could actually be her lead into the next film, but then kind of also her way out if they were to only use her in Secrets of Dumbledore and then abandon her storyline altogether, would be if there was a way that they could somehow gain access to Credence, and then they go to Nagini and they say, you bonded with him, he seems to care about you still, you may be the one who can actually get through to him. So she goes in and she tries. It goes horribly wrong. And then when he completely smashes her heart into pieces, then suddenly she decides, you know what? He's right. I don't belong here. I don't belong anywhere. She goes full on snake mode and then slithers into the night, and that's it.
Bye.
Oh, I hate that.
That's really sad.
I don't like it either, but it makes sense.
I mean, that's also a question with Nagini, is when does she go full snake?
Right, when does she turn full snake?
And that, will it be against her will, or will it be kind of a choice of like, all right, I'm just going to live as a snake now?
See, that's what I'm saying, though, is that like if she gives in to her illness and stops trying to fight it, then that's the point where it's going to take over.
Yeah.
Because she will have lost the will to resist it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Sad end for Nagini, no matter what happens.
Yeah, Nagini's not going to get a happy ending. I mean, we know she doesn't get a happy ending because she's, you know, lives to be 100-something and then gets murdered by a 17-year-old.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
After becoming a Horcrux.
Yep.
Rough. Rough stuff.
I mean, becoming a living Horcrux means that you are marked for death.
Yep.
Find an example to prove me wrong. I will sit here and wait.
I mean, Harry did come back to life. Like, he's not dead.
But he died first.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Nagini comes back to life.
We didn't
keep following her after she got decapitated.
And she gets her head cut off and she's like, I'm the Highlander!
Oh yeah, that's going to be the George Lucas director's cut of Deathly Hallows Part 2. She comes just wandering back into the Great Hall because she came back to life. She's like, I just had the weirdest conversation with Dumbledore. We were in a train station. What did I miss? Whoa! Guys, what the heck? Tom, what are you doing?
She's like, where's Credence?
Oh, yeah, because Claudia Kim just wanders in like, oh, man, did I miss something?
Well, let's get to our last member of the squad.
Our final
here.
Squad member
yeah.
Is Leeta. Because she's definitely alive.
No.
She is a tragic past haver and deeply misunderstood.
Yeah.
And that's her motivation, is that she's one of those people who is just wanting to prove everybody wrong.
I would argue her motivation is more just like wanting to go under the radar, wanting people to stop talking about her.
Yeah, I think like
I think those are tied together though.
Proving people wrong is kind of like living her best life and just honestly just living her life period.
Yeah.
And proving that a Lestrange, because we don't know what the Lestranges have done to give them this reputation.
We know what her father did.
Yeah, we know what her father did, but we don't know if that's like, if he's the first bad Lestrange or if it goes further back, because we all react to the name Lestrange because of Bellatrix, who's not even a blood Lestrange.
Yeah.
Well, at a certain point, you just kind of start, the Lestranges have a reputation and they're one of the oldest pure blood families that's out there, and it's not true of all of them, but with many of the older pure blood families that have a reputation like that, the fact that they have a reputation for loving the fact that they are pure blood wizards seems to be enough to kind of alienate them from a lot of other people in the wizarding world.
Sure. That is true.
Like, that's their version of supremacy.
Well, so, Leeta is not like that.
But that's what I'm saying with her wanting to prove people wrong, is that she wanted to prove that she wasn't evil. She wants to prove that she's not her father. She wants to prove that she's not cursed.
Yeah.
That she didn't have an affair with Newt. I don't know. Like, it just all seems to be people talk about her and she's accepted that people aren't just going to stop doing it. Like, she wants them to just stop, but she knows that she's a realistic person. She knows they're not just going to stop talking about her. So she has to get them to give up this idea they have of her by proving that it's incorrect.
Yeah, and that just goes on to her living her best life.
Until she died.
No, which she hasn't yet, which that's good. It's good. It's good. It's good.
I'm very much in the middle of, yeah, she could be dead. She could come back.
She's Schrodinger's cat.
Well, I'm not fine with her being dead, but like...
I wish she hadn't. I wanted that. More Zoe Kravitz. I feel like
I can't wait
most
to make that the show
can
title.
From that. What?
I hope Shannon's fine with Lita being dead.
I'm not fine with her being dead, but
I don't like it either. It just it's
like
with...
I'm not fine with. I don't like it from a storytelling perspective. Of you spent this whole movie focusing on this character, telling us about her life, and then she just died.
Right.
But I don't know if I believe that she's not dead and she's going to come back. I think it's very possible that they even intended for her to die and then are like, well, let's bring her back, you know, because of fan reaction. But I don't know.
I think that's what it is for me, is there's two... I don't like that she died. I wish that she had stayed alive because I thought there was more they could do with the character. And as I said, I love Zoe Kravitz, but there's two problems that I have with her coming back. First of all, they better have a very, very good explanation for why she is able to come back to life when so many other characters that I love more than Lita Lestrange, no offense to her, didn't come back to life. So they better have a really good explanation for that. And
I mean,
the second...
it would have to be that the fire didn't actually kill anybody.
Yeah, that it just transported them to the dungeons underneath Grindelwald's castle or something.
But I mean, the fact that we would have waited this many years to find out, oh, they didn't actually die.
Yeah.
That to me would feel like a little bit of a cop-out, because I think it's a very obvious implication that they died if they didn't make it through that fire.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that I don't like the idea that fan pressure is what leads to her coming back to life, because I don't like when content creators give fans what they want just because fans keep harping on about it.
Yeah.
And I don't like when content creators feel pressured into writing something that doesn't feel natural just because people want them to do it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, we're the fans. We're the ones consuming the content, but they, at the end of the day, they don't owe us anything.
And as we learned from season 2 of Glee, fans do not know what they want.
Well, fans of Glee shouldn't have voting power anyway. That show was bleh. And I know, because I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oof. I know. See, when I speak about Glee fan, I'm speaking about myself. Like, let me make that clear.
All right, so do we think the new members of the squad will stick around? We know that most of them are at least announced in being in Secrets of Dumbledore. So, like, do we think they'll be in there and then beyond? Yusuf, to me, kind of seems like a vacation friend that came home with you. Like, you met him on vacay, and then you thought he was cool, so I guess he just hopped on the plane with you? Because you'd think that when he found out that Corvus was dead, he would just be like, well, peace. But he didn't. He stuck with them.
Yeah, it does feel like he might just kind of be like, well, you're the only people I know because I've been living in a sewer.
Valid.
I mean, we don't know if he's actually been living in the sewer, but he definitely spent a lot of time in the sewer, so.
Well, that's why I said I think of him like a college roommate. Like, you meet him, you bond with each other, he doesn't really like that many people, but he likes you, so he comes home with you for the holidays because he doesn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah,
and when he comes home with you, it just becomes a regular thing, and he thinks, you know what? I like it here. I like these people, so I'll go do secret war missions for them, because what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I want more of the actor who plays Yusuf Kama.
Yeah. And I don't think we really appreciate enough that, like, all these people who are at the end of the movie did travel from Paris to Scotland. They did.
But they're wizards. Traveling from Paris to Scotland was like blinking for them.
That's true. It's not that far. But still...
get through airport security and then change planes.
I mean, there wasn't that much security in the 20s.
There's not that much security in the wizarding world now. The wizarding world is a security nightmare.
It's true.
But yeah, like, I feel like he's just going to stick around because he's like, I don't know what else to do. So you guys are going to help me find my purpose.
Yes.
And he has so much, but he has so much potential in that because he's been motivated by vengeance. Now he doesn't have to be. So now he can find something more positive. I mean, the midst of a war is probably not the easiest time for positivity, but he could give it a try.
Something more positive can be friendship.
Oh,
the magic of really friendship.
Along the way.
Yay.
Maybe he'll meet a nice man and fall in love.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I would love that for him.
I would love some happy gays.
Oh my gosh. Agreed. You know what? Okay, I'm going to have to go in and I'm going to have to be the one to write this now if it doesn't exist. So after they have this big debriefing with Dumbledore after the Grindelwald meeting in Crimes of Grindelwald, Yusuf Kama and Theseus are walking out of the castle at the same time and they're like, you want to go grab a coffee? And the other one's like, yeah, sure, why not? And they just kind of get to talking and they look at each other and like, you know what? We're both kind of alone now. But maybe we don't have to be.
Wow.
Oh, #OTP.
I would just be down with that just as a, like, friendship, let's be roommates even, like, you know, like.
Or.
Oh, and that's how we get the spinoff HBO Max series. Oh my God. Theseus and Yusuf being roommates.
Hear me out. Platonic friends that only have one futon in their studio and nobody asks any questions because it isn't something that needs to be brought up. It just is the way that they live and it works.
It's like Theseus is a straight-laced cop. Yusuf lives in a sewer. How will they get along?
Background music.
Oh, that's why we find out they only have one futon in their studio, because Yusuf just, he feels more comfortable under the sink.
Oh my God. And that's it. And he meets Creature and somehow, and Creature is just like, I get it. I sleep under a boiler,
guy.
Dude.
I like this guy.
Like this guy. He gets it.
Relatable. I love that. Dear.
Speaking God. Of Theseus, there's no question that he's going to be part of it going forward, right?
Oh yeah, no.
Like, can we even come up with a reason why he wouldn't be? I don't think so.
The only thing I can think is that maybe... If they do decide to go with, I can think of like maybe he becomes so disillusioned with everything after losing Leeta.
Yeah.
Like it's just like such a harsh awakening for him that he just pieces out entirely. But
be
that
a waste
seems
of a
very
good namesake if
him.
That's the way he goes.
Yeah,
I could see Theseus not being in the movies a lot, but I could see it as like. He's still working for the ministry, but is kind of like their man on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
good leaders are hard to come by. At least good leaders that you can count on to remain on the side of right and not be corrupted when this incredibly crafty and manipulative super bad guy is out there. You need people who are going to be able to lead and persuade who will not be corrupted by him, and that's what I think Theseus brings to the party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because if you lose him from the equation, then you don't have that many Captain Americas left.
True. Captain At this Theseus. Point, you don't even have actual Captain America yet.
I'm not even calling him Theseus anymore. When I watch him in the next movie, I'm just going to keep calling him Cap.
So something that I thought about is that going back to losing Leeta, he might... Like, I really see him as being motivated by revenge now, at least to some extent. Sure. And so he's kind of acting as a mirror to Yusuf's vengeance because he's not looking to kill a Lestrange for killing
And this is why they'll get
someone
along
he loved. He's looking to
each other.
Kill someone else for killing a Lestrange.
You get all the house points for coming up with
Yay,
that idea. When
Slytherin
I read that in
the
doc,
cup.
I thought it was... An incredible, it's amazing the way that they could switch that, because instead of Yusuf being motivated by vengeance, now it's the guy who suddenly went from having everything to his whole world has just been turned upside down.
Yep.
Yeah.
At the same time, they've established that some time has passed between Crimes of Grindelwald and Secrets of Dumbledore, so if he's holding on to that for this whole time gap that we haven't been there for, then how's he going to look going into the third movie? Like,
That's true.
I feel like it's going to have aged him a lot. He's going to look physically like he has really been through it.
Do we know how long the time gap is? Like, has this been stated?
I don't know.
I was prepared to say yes, but then again, I for some reason, the number 9 keeps popping up in my head. Like, I think somebody might have thrown out 9 years, but that might just
be a guess.
That might have just been a guess. I don't have anything to back that up.
I'm gonna look into it. So I kind of feel like there was something, but...
I mean, we are gonna have to start doing pretty big time jumps if we want to get to 1945 by the fifth movie, but...
Right.
9 years seems like a lot of time. Like, that is how you end up with Newt and Tina married with a kid by the time movie 3 comes out.
See, I'm thinking that not, either I misunderstood or I was thinking of something else. Because now I think about it, 9 years doesn't sound right.
I mean, I was thinking 3 years, but then I realized I was thinking of the time gap between Frozen and Frozen 2. So
Dan Fogler described the film as a setup for World War II, suggesting that the film is set at some point before September 1939.
That's where the 9 came from.
Okay.
Which you would hope it's set before 1939, because that would be...
That's like, what, like 12 years?
Yeah.
So that would be even farther.
Yeah.
If they did time jump 12 years, the memes are going to write themselves. Like a panel from Crimes of Grindelwald, a panel from Secrets of Dumbledore, and then at the bottom, Sirius Black going, I've done my waiting! 12 years of it! In quarantine!
So the first movie was December 1926. The second movie was apparently September 1927. So yeah. The scheduled date for Theseus and Leda's wedding was the 6th of June, 1928.
Aww.
So.
All right. So, Nagini.
She
kind of feels like when you're doing a head count after a party and you come up with one too many people and like no one knows who this girl is or who she came with or why she's there, but she's cool. So you let her stay.
Sure.
Yeah. And I feel like she has a similar motivation to Jacob for being in the squad. Like, she lost someone close to her to Grindelwald and wants to try to get him back. Even if, Jeff, I see your note here. I agree that it's not a necessarily a romantic connection, but they were close.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, they were friends.
Like, she, her and Credence, like, they barely seem to have really developed their emotional capacity to care about other people because they were very, very much uncared for themselves. So mm-hmm. even if they did feel romantic love for somebody, they would have no idea what to do with it.
Yeah.
So there was no romantic chemistry, I felt like, between Credence and Nagini. It felt more like, to me, that classic trope of those two kids who end up in the same foster home that come from separate families and they look out for each other because they both recognize that they really don't have anybody else.
Yeah.
So it was more like a brother-sisterly kind of thing for me between Credence and her, which is why I said that her exit out of the series could be she still feels like they have that connection because she doesn't know what Credence is going through while they're apart. So when she goes to talk to him and it doesn't go well, then that's her tipping point where she just says, you know what, I can't handle this, there's no upside here, I'm out.
Yeah, I can see that.
So
yeah.
She, I think, would be around for, I'm calling it, she would be around for the next movie, but then after that she's out.
Bold prediction.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah.
If somebody else could come up with another one, I'd be open to hearing it, but it's the one that makes sense to me.
No, I can absolutely see that happening. I do feel it kind of be a waste for the character because they spent all, again, just like with Leda and with Theseus, they spent all this time building her up. It would be a shame to only see her in two movies and then she leaves to only to show up again.
Yeah.
In full Snake. But everyone can't have an HBO Max series that's only Yusuf and Theseus.
I mean, at the same time, talk about pressure from the fandom. I kind of felt like with some people, at least, the response to Nagini's presence in Crimes of Grindelwald was incredibly polarizing. So from a producer's standpoint, they might just decide that she doesn't need to stay around for the next couple of movies because it would require too much time focusing on her and not enough on other people who have richer story potential.
Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult situation because it's like there was a lot of controversy around, you know, this East Asian woman turning into a snake and stuff. A controversy that we aren't qualified to speak towards.
No.
But it's like, so, but you've already done that. You've already established that. So mm-hmm. then it's like, is it worse to then be like, well, then we're just not going to have this person of color anymore. So we don't have to deal with that controversy, you know? Kind of like, yeah. It reminds me of with Star Wars where people really hated Rose.
Oh, poor Rose.
I didn't understand that at all. I loved her.
Yeah, that was people being racist about an East Asian woman. And so then in the last movie, they were like, well, let's just have her in it less. And that was not good. It was like,
it was a bad look. Especially, like, I'm sorry, this is not a Star Wars podcast. Yeah. This just makes me mad. I love Dominic Monaghan. But the fact that he won a bet with J.J. Abrams and then basically got what should have been Rose's part?
Yeah.
Ooh, I just need to go lie down for a while.
Ugh, disgusting.
So, yeah, it's like, if you just kind of get rid of her, that's an issue. But then it's like, what you've already set up for her character is an issue. But I think it would be a bigger issue to get rid of her after you've introduced her. Especially if you then have her come back in the last movie and she's just a snake now, and it's like...
Yeah.
I think if you write her out for the right reasons, then it's okay, because it would be worse to keep her in for the wrong reasons.
That's fair.
And I'm going to phrase this very, very carefully. I love Claudia Kim's presence in the film, but I think that keeping her around just so you can say that you have at least one character who is a person of color is the wrong reason to keep her character in the film, because then you're essentially reducing her to her racial identity, and that would be a really, really bad move.
That's very true. And it's like,
That would look worse than anything else.
You write her out, they need to acknowledge her in some way. They need to mention, like, what happened to her, you know?
Right.
Or you need to bring her back later or something, yeah. Be kind of fun if you just, like, saw her being a student at Hogwarts.
Oh, that would be cute. Yeah.
That would be kind of
cute. Like, you know, she's too old, but obviously, I mean, I assume she never got, like, a magical education.
How much education do you really need to be a snake?
I mean, you gotta learn how to unhinge your jaw and eat rats and stuff.
Do you need to go to school for that?
I don't know.
You could learn that from
it.
A YouTube video. Yeah, I could pull up a YouTube video now on how snakes do that.
I guess Jeff's a snake, so...
Jeff is snake school.
Yeah, I'm going to open a snake school now.
Okay, speaking of women of color.
Yes, who are treated bad, who are done dirty by this movie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Lita.
Yeah?
My first question, can she stick with them? And Jeff is very rude.
She could if she weren't dead.
How dare?
How dare I what? How dare I go through the five stages of grief like a normal person and acknowledge that she's not here anymore? She's dead.
Yeah, how dare you? I have a healthy grief coping process for this fictional character.
Impossible.
And so, but if she, in the event that she does live, like, let's say that they do come up with some
that could be a similar thing to what we were just talking about with Nagini, where it's like, well, now you're just bringing her back to have her.
Right. Or, just because you can be like, look, we do have a woman of color.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would. I mean, they just have to do it the right way. And I think there is a right way, you know, but...
I'm sorry, we'll just don't see the right reasons to bring her back. You're either bringing her back because she is a person of color, which looks bad on you, or you're bringing her back because you let the fans pressure you into doing it. And I'm sorry, but speaking as somebody who is in many fandoms that have reputations for having... dare I say, a lot of trolls living under the bridges. If you let fans have that much voting power in the content that you're making, you might as well just give them producer credits and let them write the script for you.
I do think that there's a possibility that, and I don't think this is the case, but I think there is world where they've always intended to bring her back and they've always intended that she didn't die in this fire. But yeah, I mean, no matter what they do, they've already messed up. I mean, it's the same thing with Nagini. They already messed up with her. So it's like, no matter what you do going forward, you can't make up for that.
Yeah, and regardless of if they did always intend for Lita to come back, if they do intend for Lita to come back, there is still going to be a portion of the fandom who's going to feel that way, that you're bringing her back because you needed a woman of color. You're bringing her back because... Yeah. And Lisa just yelled about it on Speak Beastie for the last 2.5 years and wanted to make her happy.
And that's going
to
be, there's going to be both the, you know, allies, the people who like Lita, and then the racists who don't like Lita are going right. to be upset for, you know, reasons. And
let me just say this. Nobody would be happier than me to hear me admit that I was wrong and that Lita actually does live. I would be absolutely thrilled to be wrong about that. I just don't think I am.
Yeah.
As long as they could bring her back in the right way for the right reasons, then fine.
Yeah. I mean, thank God that they didn't kill Yusuf or set up that Yusuf permanently turns into a snake. So we at least have a man of color who, like...
Yay for Yusuf!
Don't know where his story... If they killed Yusuf later, I'd be so mad for, like, every reason. But yeah. Well, and I'll say this too. If you bring Lita back to life for however you do it, you can't then kill her. She can't die later on.
No, she's got to have the main character armor from then on.
Yeah. Yep.
So, well, then my question is, what does that do to Theseus's motivation? If his motivation is revenge and then his reason for revenge is just like, surprise, I'm here. I was fine.
Yeah.
I've just been in a dungeon.
I guess.
Wearing my pretty red dress.
You know what? Let us continue our connection to Captain America. He didn't like having to cope with a world with no Peggy Carter in it, or with a Peggy Carter who was significantly aged and not the same person that he left behind, but he did it.
Yeah.
He still had plenty of other stuff going on. He still believes in justice. He still believes in doing the right thing, in protecting people, in being an example. He still has plenty of other things he brings to the party and to motivate him. He just has to decide, is vengeance going to supersede all of those things forever, or is he going to have to learn to let go of that?
Yeah, and I think this will really kind of depend on how much time has passed.
Yeah,
and
because
if he is really on the vengeance track or not.
If it is, like, 6 months and he's still full of rage and vengeance, yeah. That's one thing. If it's been, like, 3 or 4 years and vengeance, maybe it's still there, but, like, on the back burner?
Yeah.
Then...
Well, and you'd think that after, like, 3 or 4 years, he wouldn't necessarily be in a, like, I'm gonna go off and do my own thing that you usually get in vengeance plots, you know?
Right.
Of the, like, oh, I'm just gonna go kill him. Like, he'd be cooperating with everyone.
Yeah.
The problem with vengeance as the motivation for a character, especially a character who has so much going for them like Theseus that doesn't initially begin from a point of vengeance, is that it can only be a motivator temporarily, because eventually he's going to have to learn to let that go, or it's going to be the undoing of him, because that's the thing about revenge. When you finally get it, you either have nothing else, or you get it and you realize that it didn't actually bring you. It's the white whale. You finally got it, and then it didn't give you the satisfaction or the closure that you thought that it would, because you're still messed up inside. So what do you do from there?
This is the plot of Captain America Civil War. It's, you know... all these men are seeking vengeance against other men. And the lesson is like, no, that's not going to help. They don't all learn the lesson very well, and it's not a good movie. But...
Did we watch the same Civil War?
What? That's the lesson? T'Challa, like, literally says, hey.
So- you said Civil War, but my brain heard Winter Soldier.
My brain heard Winter Soldier too.
And so I was like, wait, Winter Soldier isn't a good movie?
Winter Soldier is a good movie. And
you are right, T'Challa was absolutely motivated by vengeance, but like I just said, he had to let that go.
Yes, exactly. And then meanwhile, like Tony wanted to kill Bucky, and then he and Cap got in this whole big fight, and then it had to be like, no, man, it's not helpful.
You know what? I love Cap. I know Cap loves Bucky, but I've been saying this for a while, and I'm glad I was wrong because I'm glad it worked out better in the end, but the whole time I'm watching Civil War, I'm thinking, you know what? You just need to let him take old Yeller out behind the barn, Cap.
Whoa.
It just, look at what it, I know we're not a Marvel podcast, and there's probably going to be a lot of people very angry that I said this.
This is why we're not a Marvel podcast.
But look at all the unrest it created because it, you know what? Never mind.
I agree that Cap did not respond to the situation in the best way. Yeah.
He did not.
But that's for our Marvel podcast.
Speak
Marvel, coming into you to a podcatcher very soon.
God, how many alternate names for this show can we come up with?
Speak Marvel is our Marvel spinoff. Can we come up with?
Maybe this should be a Patreon bonus thing where we draw many parallels between Marvel and Fantastic Beasts. We could do it.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like we could probably create a whole arc for Theseus just based on the Captain America movies.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Somebody get that guy a shield with the Ministry of Magic emblem on it.
Okay, I know what my next cosplay is going to be. Anyway.
Yes!
All right, so next question with the new squad that is... We lost Queenie, and now we're getting four new people. So are they trying to replace Queenie with these new people? Like, with the new squad?
Yeah.
No. She was the only legilimens that they had. And honestly, she didn't even get to do... this squad is here to do missions. I feel like that's what they're setting up. She never did... I mean, she did everything that happened with Newt and the gang in like a 24-hour period for the first movie, but those were sort of incidental for her. She wasn't hired on to do anything as part of the squad, so she never actually got to fulfill that role. Not really. Plus, they don't have a legilimens amongst these other four that we've been talking about, so they can't replace her because none of them have the thing that she had going for her that they didn't.
I think also, like, from a movie-making standpoint, like, I'm pretty sure we're still going to be following Queenie. So like, it's not like, oh, this character is gone, so we have more time for these characters, you know?
Yeah.
So... yeah, there's still a balance there that Crimes of Grindelwald wasn't good at with all the characters, but...
Well, just because they were... Hopefully now that we've gotten all of the characters introduced, we'll be able to have more time to get to know them.
As long as they don't keep introducing new kind of main characters.
No. I mean, introduce characters, but at this point, if you're going to introduce new characters, just kind of probably, I guess, try to stick to ones that are obviously not going to stick around and become a thing, because we're on movie three.
Yeah.
Just double down on what you have to work with, because you have plenty to work with.
I mean, all these characters we're talking about were introduced in the second movie, and all had, like, I mean, not Nagini as much, but they all had, like, a story and a backstory. And that was a lot to try to fit into one movie and try to give them all the time they needed. But now that we know them, it's like, okay, we can explore these characters more. We don't need more characters like this introduced.
No.
Which I think they learned their lesson, but we'll see.
Hope so.
We'll see.
Yeah.
it's surprising and yet not how many times Hollywood has to learn the same lessons over and over and over. And part of that is because people don't agree about what the lessons are.
Yeah. Next point. All right. I like.
And like something that I thought about is that there's really no peppy people in the squad anymore. Because everybody's kind of like kind of a downer. There's no one who's just like, hey guys, I brought Starbucks, let's get going. Everybody's like, I brought lattes and I'm sad about it. I mean, they're still bringing lattes. They're still doing the work, but nobody's really enjoying themselves.
Sad lattes with no sprinkles on them.
Trag. And Jeff, you've got a good point here about Queenie's personality.
Oh, yeah. To be honest, all of her pep was sort of for that weird, just out of nowhere moment in Crimes of Grindelwald where she shows up, Jacob is obviously under the influence of something, and then confetti happens because ta-da, we're married. And then as soon as Jacob realizes what's actually going on here, like, all of her pep goes out the window. Vanishes. And she doesn't get it back. So she's not all that peppy for like the entire second film, and we're on the threshold of a war here. So I don't see her or really anybody else being all that. I mean, I would love it if somebody was kind of peppy. Like, maybe that's why they go to Brazil.
It's like we need some sort of balance of, like, personalities. You know, that someone doesn't have to be, like, super peppy or, yeah, like, positive, but
they can't all be the broody one.
Yeah, that's kind of.
And right now it kind of feels like they're all the broody one.
Yeah, they're all, like, something terrible has happened to me and I don't know what to do with my life. And it's like, you know, Newt is not broody, but like he's
not not broody.
Yeah, like he's broody and he's not broody like Yusuf and like Theseus will presumably be. Like, Newt's just more like, I'm kind of lonely and a introverted person.
Oh, no, it's broody like a broody nest mama. He's broody because he's never said eggs.
And Tina's gonna be broody because Queenie left. I feel like Tina's broodiness is gonna be more like, though, I want to fight stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, Tina has a very aggressive depression.
Tina's not gonna be like, oh, I'm just gonna sit at home and be sad. But also, like, her person is still alive.
No, Tina's broody because her coat weighs, like, 15 pounds, and she's tired of carrying that around. Like, give her something lighter to wear, Colleen.
I hope the next movie takes place in spring, so we can see everybody's fetching, light jackets.
Or, summer. Yeah. Get them in shorts.
Oh, man. Can we please see Newt in black socks and sandals when they're in Brazil?
Can we get some stripy swimsuits? Like,
that's one of the secrets of Dumbledore, is that he makes the whole squad shop at Tommy Bahama.
Yes.
Yes!
In the 30s when there was definitely a Tommy Bahama.
I am a snake. I just had a Nagini moment. Turned to a snake there for a minute. Anyway, what role do we think they're going to play in future movies?
Yusuf is going to be a spy.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I love this. I love that angle for him. Yeah. The fact that he knows so much about the wizarding world and his knowledge of family trees, like, that's gotta come in handy. You're right. I think he's gonna be some kind of undercover guy. I love that.
And that's basically all he's ever done. So, like, there could be a, I don't want to do that anymore, but I think it's also like, well, that's just what he does. Like,
well, what else is he going to... how the conversation is going to go down, is he'll say to Dumbledore, has it ever crossed your mind that I don't want to do this anymore? And Dumbledore's like, God, I hope no one ever says that to me again. And then Dumbledore's like, dude, honestly, what else are you going to do? Like, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 5 seconds. Tell me one other thing you could do right now besides this, and I won't bring it up ever again. He looks at his watch that has, like, 12 different hands or whatever it is, and then he looks up and says, oh, nope, time's up, so guess what? Put on the spy suit, dude.
I'm sorry, Venus just passed Jupiter, your time's up.
Theseus can also be a spy, and they can be spy friends.
That's why they share a studio apartment.
Yeah.
They're spies.
You know, spies, they're always living together.
That's the name of the sitcom, Spy Guys. Oh my God. No, 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 no. Guys. The show is called Spy Curious.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Shut up.
And that will be the name of the fan fiction that I will write for them.
Oh my God. It needs to be like a Mr. and Mr. Smith situation. Yusuf, we need you to take out Theseus.
Like, a hand comes around the corner, wand blast, kitchen falls apart. Still alive, baby?
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie takes her, like, 12 children to see the movie because they've been begging to see it, and she's sitting there watching this moment that's an obvious parody thinking, this is bullcrap.
So, for Theseus, speaking of, in future movies, again, this really does depend on how long the time gap is.
Yes.
Because I feel like he either goes one of two ways. Either he's, you know, spreading the word, pulling Newt out of trouble, being his best political cop self.
Yeah, kind of the like, I'm going to stay in this position, but I'm going to do good.
Yeah.
In every way I can.
Because I know we don't know that he's a Gryffindor, but he's definitely a Gryffindor. And so, like, that either that or he just goes full Harry and just barges into situations saving people because he couldn't save Leta. And just goes full-on reckless.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
So again, it's really going to depend on the time gap there. Because I feel like if it's closer to Leta's death, we might see more of the recklessness. If it's further from, it's definitely had some time to mellow. He might not be grieving. He might still be grieving a little bit. And so maybe he's more into the, I'm going to pull you out of the fire and keep doing the things to protect the world.
Okay, fine. But he can't die. At least not until...
Because if he dies, I leave the theater.
Like, no, he will almost die in the third movie. He will, like, be in the hospital and Newt will be, like, sitting at his bedside at St. Mungo's and they'll have a talk that hopefully won't last more than 2.5 minutes of screen time. But it will... That will be when he suddenly realizes how reckless he's been.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, let me repeat my joke. He'll be in the hospital and Newt will say, on your left. anyway.
God bless it.
This episode is hilarious.
I think Theseus could go a lot of different ways, basically.
Yeah.
We'll just see.
Yeah.
Nagini.
So Nagini, I feel like she is kind of an underexplored and undervalued resource right now as a character. But I'm thinking that the fact that she's a circus performer is important. Because that means she might have friends in unexpected places who can help her out because she's been through the city before. She knows people who live here, or she's been through and so she knows where the circus would kind of be. So she knows some inconspicuous spots to kind of hide out and check things out if necessary. Or like when they go to Brazil, she can turn into a snake and like talk with the other snakes and be like, hey, have you seen a pale weirdo through here lately? And they're like, besides that dude with you? And she's like, no, the other pale weirdo.
And see, from a producer standpoint, I'm thinking, okay, there's no way to imply that that's what happened. Like, you have to show it, or there's no point in even bringing it up. So is it worth the money we would spend shooting it and then including that into the story? And honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough.
I still think they're just going to keep her safe until they can actually get to Credence and then send her in to talk to him, and it's going to go badly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible. Or I think she could even be laying low and then kind of go rogue to go talk to Credence at a moment, you know? And they're like, no, Nagini.
No, come back.
And it goes badly. No matter what, I think we can all agree that when we say it goes badly, we don't think Credence is going to kill Nagini.
No.
No.
He's not going to listen. Nagini doesn't die here, but like we don't think he's going to try to do that.
No. Grindelwald's filled his head up too much with fantasies and lies, and she's not able to bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, and that also, you know, it ties in with where exactly is Credence's story gonna go.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love him and I don't want him to die, but that's another episode.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of people who died.
How dare.
Leta.
We are here today to mourn the death of Leta Lestrange because she is definitely dead.
In the event that she's not dead,
people are dead.
Like, I feel like it's very easy to go with that damsel in distress angle that she's just like wasting away in the dungeons underneath the castle.
Yeah.
And the squad has to go and get her. And she and Theseus have a moment where they touch hands to the bars and he goes, I'll get you out of here.
See, I don't buy that for her at all because they set
her
up.
That would be the easy and cheap angle to go with. What I want for her is they find like an underground tunnel to sneak into Grindelwald's castle and they open the door and she's on the other side spinning the keys around her finger and she goes, I expected you 5 minutes ago, or something very cool like that.
Yeah, the only way I could see her like still being in a dungeon just chilling there is her just being like, well, I deserve this. This is my punishment.
Oh.
You know, that kind of thing. Not because she can't do anything about it, but she's like, this is where I belong.
See, again, we've now time jumped several years between the last movie and the one we're approaching now. I don't think she would have held on to that way of thinking for that long.
But she's been holding on to that way of thinking like her whole life.
But not sitting in a dungeon just letting people punish her.
But
she's the wrong, I mean, the way Anne described would kind of sort of work, but they would still, again, they would have to give us a good explanation for why she has been sitting in a dungeon for this long, because it's been years.
Yeah.
Like, if we were jumping to even a few weeks or maybe a few months from the end of Crimes of Grindelwald, then I could see that being the way that it would work out for Leta, but not with the amount of time that we're dealing with between the second movie and the third, because she's definitely no damsel in distress.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
She's also not a damsel in distress because she is dead.
How dare?
She was so young, anyway. But now she's dead. She is as dead as every dead animal that has ever died.
Oh my God. Well,
anyway, now that I'm crying, that's the end of our main discussion about the hashtag squad.
Such a good squad.
Shall we go on to our new case this week?
I would love to.
Yeah. What's in it?
Open up the case. It's a doxy.
Ooh, careful.
The doxy, which is also known as the biting fairy. And these are, of course, in Harry Potter, in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the book. I mean, we'll get to whether or not they're in the movie in a moment. But in the book, they are a Ministry of Magic classification of XXX, which means a competent wizard should cope. And the description is, the doxy is often mistaken for a fairy, though it is a quite separate species. Like the fairy, it has a minute human form, though in the doxy's case, this is covered in thick black hair and has an extra pair of arms and legs. The doxy's wings are thick, curved, and shiny, much like a beetle's. Doxies are found throughout Northern Europe and America, preferring cold climates. They lay up to 500 eggs at a time and bury them. The eggs hatch in 2 to 3 weeks. Doxies have double rows of sharp, venomous teeth, and an antidote should be taken if bitten. In the wizarding world, they're mostly treated as pests, like bugs or rats. Infestations can be removed with doxycide, which we see in Grimald Place in Order of the Phoenix, and Fred and George take some of the venom to possibly use in their skiving snack boxes. Don't know if they actually used them. It's an interesting choice, boys. Now, in the Fantastic Beasts movie, they're not really featured. They're just, as far as I could find, you just see doxies once. And they're kind of flying around Jacob when he's inside Newt's case in the first movie, right after you see Frank. So you don't really get a very good look at them. But you can find some cool artwork of them online, like official artwork. There was some stuff from the Art of Fantastic Beasts book So if you have that book, you can find stuff in there. And then I also found, through this research, the website of Sam Rowan, who's a concept artist who specializes in creature design. And he has worked on the Fantastic Beasts movies and lots of other movies. And he has... SamRowan.com is his website. And we should definitely do a segment about him later. But he worked on the Zauru, and that was like his kind of big project for Crimes of Grindelwald. But he has artwork of the Doxy and lots of other Fantastic Beasts. He has also worked on Ready Player One, Avengers Age of Ultron, X-Men Days of Future Past,
Nerd,
Beauty and the Beast. So yeah, some pretty cool art. If you want to look up him, and we'll do a
Nomad Movie Magic.
Nomad Movie Magic. We can do a Nomad Movie Magic about him at some point. But yeah, he developed artwork of the Doxy, where it's using its giant ears to fly. Those are its wings.
That is really cute.
Yeah, so it's kind of like his, it's very, the way that like his artwork and it's portrayed in the movie is kind of more animalistic than human-like, whereas the book describes it as having a human form, but it doesn't say that it looks that human. But it's also appeared in lots of the video games, and they look very different in the video games. And I should say, I mentioned they appear in like Order of the Phoenix, the book. They don't appear in the Harry Potter movies, really.
No, because they do away with the whole Scaving Snack Box arc.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the word doxy is an old-fashioned term meaning floozy, prostitute, mistress, stuff like that. It's possibly from the Middle Dutch word dokke, D-O-C-K-E, which means doll. And on that note, if you're looking for pictures of these funky little bugs, don't just search doxy. Aren't just gonna be funky little bug pictures.
Did you get a lot of dachshund pictures too? Because no. Doxy is also a nickname for dachshunds.
No.
Huh.
Well, yeah. If doxy can also mean floozy, no wonder they have 500 eggs at a time. My goodness.
Oh my.
Yeah, so that's a doxy. I'm just some, you know, little bugs. Just some biting fairies. Yeah.
I feel like there's at least and Newt may be one of those people out there who's trying to be a doxy preservationist, or at least they're trying to figure out a way to procure things from doxies to use for magical antidotes and other things without actually having to kill the creatures.
Yeah,
because it's pretty clear that the doxy is a creature and many of their individual components have magical properties for which humans have found use, but the trouble with that is that when you don't just come by them naturally, then it can create a problem, like using dragon scale or like using dragon hide to make protective gear without the dragon dying of natural causes. Like, you definitely should not be slaying magical creatures just to get to their stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, like in the Fantastic Beasts book, Newt doesn't usually dive into like how each creature is good for, you know, the environment, the ecosystem. Because just thinking about like real animals, you know, there's annoying creatures and bugs and stuff that it's like, but they're important for the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like mosquitoes, and we don't know if they're important to the ecosystem. There's no evidence of that, and we should just kill them all. Because they're just annoying, but yeah, and they just spread disease, but they might be important, we just haven't figured out why yet, so that's why we haven't, you know. I mean, also they're like, they'd be really hard to wipe out, but yeah, so bugs, am I right?
Bugs.
If I saw a doxy, I would lose my mind and burn my house down.
The kind of and I mean the fact that in the scene in Grimold Place where they're trying to get the doxies out of the house, the fact that they have to like shake the curtains and the doxies come mm-hmm. flying at you and you spray the doxy side to paralyze them, like that mm-hmm. to me, that's the thing. Like if I'm walking by and I see a bug on like somebody's window or in a tree, it's not going to bother me. It's when it comes flying at my face.
Yeah.
And my fight or flight instincts kick in and I just start flailing about like a weirdo.
And I'm like, I shouldn't flail about like this, but I do it anyway.
But I can't stop myself.
I do it on purpose, it's not flailing, it's flouncing, and flouncing is to be encouraged. Flailing is never advisable. But I just don't like things flying at my face. Like, I think doxies have a right to exist. I just don't like the idea that I'm going to go close my curtains one day and they're going to come flying at me, or that I'm going to pull back the curtains one day and see 500 doxy eggs piled up in the corner of the floor next to the window, and then they all go hatching, and then next thing you know, it's like a scarier version of the Cornish pixie scene from Chamber of Secrets, because your house is full of doxies and they're knocking over all your stuff.
Horrifying.
Well, and biting you with poisonous teeth.
The good news is they like cold climates, so I don't have to worry about them.
I'm Shannon. I don't have to worry about them because I'm in Florida.
Well, let's close the newt case.
Before the doxies get out.
Yeah, please.
Good idea.
So for our podcast question of the week, we obviously have feelings about these members of the new squad. So we want to know from our listeners, which member of the new squad is your favorite? And if you'd like to share an answer with us, we would love to hear it. So feel free to drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And as always, if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, we would love to hear your thoughts and we appreciate your feedback.
And you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, and Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And don't forget to support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. We have stickers and bonus content and bloopers. What Patreon content have you guys done recently or have coming up?
Well, not that long ago, I got on this huge fan fiction kick, and for a while, a few of us were reading through this epic several chapter journey called The New Adventures of Newt Scamander. The person who wrote it, they call themselves the Parody Master. They have finally written the last three chapters. We have not gone in to do that yet, but it's on the slate. Recently, people may have heard that there has been a test screening of Secrets of Dumbledore, which means that there are some spoilers out there. Ooh. And some people like them, some people don't. I'm not going to spoil anything here, but if you are the kind of person who would like to know what came from that test screening, Lizzie and I actually recorded a discussion of some of the spoilers that have come out since that test screening.
Wow. Yeah, and that episode just dropped on the Patreon, so you can, if that's something you're into, which I'm not, I managed to stay unspoiled for Rise of the Resistance for 18 months. I'm going to try to do the same for this movie. If spoilers are your thing, I would recommend checking it out.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for this episode of Speak Beastie. I'm Shannon.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Anne. Case closed.